Good afternoon, Your Honors. May I please report?
Yes, and if you'd either speak a little louder or get a little closer to your mic, that'd be helpful.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Great. Thank you, Your Honor. By the way, my client's name is Gabriel Tatkan, so you are very close. You're very close. And I would like to reserve 2 minutes at the end of my rebuttal, and I'll try
to watch the clock, but it will help you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, my name is Michael Andy Georges, and I'm appearing on behalf of the petitioner. The record shows that substantial evidence does not support the BIA's adverse credibility findings. The credibility findings is based on speculation and conjecture, and therefore I'm asking the court to reverse the BIA findings and remand the matter for further proceedings. BIA specifically limited its adverse credibility findings to two possibilities. One lack of detail in one alleged sentence, and I'll try to address the previous one.
I'll tell you what would be helpful for me. It seems to me the strongest, I'm not saying how it comes out, but the strongest of the BIA's reasons seem to be about the interactions with Colombian authorities and what was sought or not sought in the way of protection there. Could you address that for me and tell me why that wouldn't support the credibility determination?
Perfect. Well, first thing is, Your Honor, when the judge asked the petitioner to explain the inconsistencies, the way the question was framed was, well, did you say this to the asylum officer? The IJ never said, well, you said this statement to the asylum officer, and today you're testifying this way. Can you explain the inconsistencies? Instead of giving that opportunity, all the IJ did was, well, you had this interview on that date, so did you make this statement? And the petitioner said, I did not, which is true. He did not make that statement. All the judge should have said is, like, he should have given that opportunity to explain and then give him that two different portions of the question. That would have an opportunity to explain the interest. On the second note of that as well, this is a note, three of them, Your Honor, the testimony before IJ, and then the statement in the asylum officers, it has two parts. The second part is about the delay, and the first part is whether he applied, whether he was told he could apply, and whether he found someone who could help him apply to live in Colombia. And if you look at it, and given the fact that he was using the interpreter, and he was not really, it wasn't read back for him. Did not get a chance to break, did not get a chance to read the Q&A, the CDP. And that makes it very clear that, one, he never had an opportunity to review it, did not sign it, he did not really know what the CDP officer was writing. He might certainly have said that, well, I understand it, my reading is, he was fairly consistent throughout, and that he said he was told he could apply, and somebody was trying to help him. The only thing is, when the note was taken at the CBP, it says he applied for asylum. And again, IJ never gave him a chance. He was never offered an opportunity to explain the inconsistency. It was not even brought his attention that he was. Did you say the statement to the asylum officer? And he said, I did.
Are you, and I'll tell you, it is difficult to hear you. I'm doing my best, but if you can speak directly into that microphone, I think it may help us. But just to clarify, is it your position on this last point about the Colombia testimony and the credible fear that there is no inconsistency at all among the three statements? Is that what you're saying?
That I'm happy to hear you were bringing up, Your Honor. Can you hear me, Your Honor?
It'd be better if you spoke louder. We can't really control these connections, so I'm just going to have to ask you to speak a little louder.
Okay. Your Honor, I did not hear the question from Judge Brasso. Can you repeat?
Yes, the question is on this issue about the Colombian statements, about whether he applied for relief in Colombia. Is it your position that when you look at those three statements, they're actually not inconsistent in the first place? Is that part of what you're saying?
Well, Well, what I'm saying is that they appear inconsistent. However, the petitioner was not given an opportunity to explain the apparent inconsistency. He never had a chance to explain them. But if you see the way the IJ framed the question, all he said was that he never said, IJ did not say, well, you said this to the CBP officer, and you are saying the statement.
Well, he did explain it, I think. He said, I didn't make that first statement, and the IJ apparently didn't believe that.
If you see that, what the IJ said was, well, did he say this to the asylum officer, to the CBP officer? It did not brought up the inconsistency. Obviously, the petitioner did not know even there was inconsistent statement. Unless the IJ brought that inconsistency, how would he supposed to understand those inconsistencies?
But let's go back to Judge Bress's question, because I'm not sure that your correct answer to it isn't yes. There are statements here about applying for relief and asylum, but I'm not sure he's ever inconsistent in the notion that he didn't make an application for asylum. He asked people if they could help him, he said. And that, I think, is applying for relief. But I'm not sure he ever makes a statement that he applied for asylum in Colombia. Do you agree?
I agree. He never said that he applied for asylum in Colombia. That's the note from the CBP officers.
So Judge Bress, your answer to Judge Bress's question, I think, is the statements aren't facially inconsistent. You're still left with the problem that he says he didn't make one of them. And the Customs and Border Patrol officer has him making it. But at least as to the issue about the statements conflicting, I'm not certain they do.
Well, I agree, Your Honor. They don't conflict. But the point that I'm trying to make is basically, Your Honor, he never had that opportunity to explain when the judge brought that up to him. That is the point that I'm trying. But I understand that they were not inconsistent throughout the record.
You wanted to save some time for rebuttal. I told you I'd remind you. So is this a good time for you?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Williams.
Good morning. John Williams on behalf of the government. In this immigration case, the immigration judge found that the petitioner lacked credibility, and the board affirmed that the immigration judge's determination that the petitioner lacked credibility, and the agency cited specific and cogent reasons, including inconsistencies, implausible testimony, a lack of detail, as well as omissions. I'm going to go to the Colombian the issue regarding that, and I'll come back because the judges you ask a number of questions. When you look at the whether or not the petitioner applied for asylum and the statements regarding that, at administrative record 291, he told the Custom Borders Patrol asylum officer that he admitted that he applied for relief in Colombia.
Applied for relief, correct?
Yes.
Applied for relief. Now, why isn't that consistent with his statement that when he spoke to the person in Colombia, he asked if there was some way they could help him? I'm not sure that's applying for asylum.
That's correct. But the judge went on to ask the petitioner at administrative record 166, on your trip to the United States, did you ever apply for asylum or other type of immigration relief in the country? And he said, no, he did not. But he also told the during his credible fear interview that he met a person who said she would help with his applying for asylum relief.
Right, but the second and the third statements seem very close. There's not much inconsistency. If there is an inconsistency, it's perhaps with the first ground, but he was asked about that. He said he didn't make that statement, and the IJ apparently just did not believe that, but it seems then that this whole issue just turns on the rest of the credibility determination, because the IJ didn't really explain why he didn't believe the denial about the first statement. So doesn't this just put us back to these other three grounds that the BIA recognized?
Well, there are a myriad of other grounds. I just wanted to make one other statement with regard to this point, what counsel said, and that was that the petitioner was provided opportunity to explain whether or not the inconsistency regarding the asylum. On the administrative record, page 167, after the immigration judge asked whether or not he applied for relief in Colombia, he asked counsel, "Do you have any follow-up for your client?" And counsel said, "I do not." He later asked counsel, "Do you rest now?" And he said, "I do." And then he was asked whether or not he would provide a closing statement just following these questions, and counsel indicated that he waived. But there are many other implausibilities and omissions in this record for which the immigration judge and the board rested this case. You have two incidents, the June 2015 incident in which the petitioner exited the car despite known trouble and engaged the military when he indicated that he was knowledgeable that the military was causing harm to others.
Did the BIA, as I read the BIA's decision with respect to time in Ethiopia, it relied entirely on the failure to seek medical treatment. Am I wrong on that?
Yes, Your Honor. The immigration judge noted, in addition,
the IJ made a broader ruling. My question is, didn't the BIA only cite the failure to seek medical treatment?
No, the board referenced a collective information regarding the immigration judge's decision. If you look at page one of the immigration judge's decision,
I want to know what the board did. I understand the board had three or four reasons, but I'm focusing now simply on the time in Ethiopia. And I thought the board affirmed the judge because they found his testimony not credible with respect to seeking medical treatment. Is there any place else where the board finds his testimony not credible about what happened in Ethiopia?
Generally the board states in its decision, specifically the immigration judge relied on the inherent implausibility of respondent's testimony, the lack of detailed testimony, and inconsistency. So it states that in its decision. It goes on to say that the petitioner claimed he was beaten by military forces in 2015, arrested and detained for a year. And so the board cites the actual full information, the incident during that time in June 2015.
I just don't think that's a fair reading of what the BIA said here, because when you look at the paragraph, the BIA is talking about whether it was implausible that he didn't get medical treatment. And when you combine that paragraph with the BIA's footnote, which says very clearly we're only relying on the grounds that we give, I don't think you can come in and try to defend the BIA decision based on the implausibility of the petitioner going up to the police and raising an issue with some of the things he saw. That the IJ offered that, but the BIA, I don't see how you can read this to endorse that finding.
Well, that even if the court doesn't rest on those facts, you do have the implausible nature of the petitioner stating that he had been seriously harmed, beat with the butt of a gun during the June 2015 incident, and following that, he didn't seek medical attention, and during February.
Does the record indicate that medical attention was either necessary or available? It seems to me kind of speculative to say, well, you couldn't have been seriously injured because you didn't go to a doctor or some medical treatment when there's no real evidence that such was available.
Or that he needed it. I mean, he drove away from the incident. There's not a record that would suggest he was in need of medical attention and didn't seek it.
And so that is the irony of this. You, on the one hand, you have the petitioner stating that he was persecuted, and that he was beat severely. But on the other hand, he says, but guess what? I was able to drive away, without needing medical attention. He follows that up with the February 2016 incident, and it's a similar situation. He spends a year detained. He outlines beatings, brutal beatings, allegedly, that were so severe. But once again, following his release, his alleged escape, he didn't seek medical treatment.
Once again, it just seems speculative. I mean, there's no indication that the beatings he claims to have received happened anytime near the point at which he escaped from the prison van. So there's just not a record that would support this finding. I just don't see that.
The beatings occurred over a period of time. He does state that he requested medicine from a friend. So there is some indication on his own accord that he needed some type of medicine, some type of treatment, but then he doesn't go on to seek professional medical treatment. So
refresh my recollection on this. How quickly did petitioner leave the country after escaping?
I'm not entirely clear how much time expired from his escape until he went to Djibouti, but
yeah, my impression from reading the record was he fled the country as soon as he escaped, or relatively quickly after he escaped. So it seems to me perfectly logical that if you're fleeing the authorities after escaping, you're not going to stop on the way to try to get medical treatment.
That depends. In this instance, we're talking about the board and the IJ sensing that this was implausible. And if he suffered such severe beatings as he described that he wishes to base a persecution claim on, that he's gone over and over again,
then the question comes to... I'm sorry, it's always difficult. We're talking over each other on Zoom, but the question I have is, when was the last beating in relation to the escape?
It's unclear when the last beating was.
Doesn't that present something of a difficulty for saying that when he escaped, it's implausible that he didn't seek medical attention at that point?
No, based on the description of the beatings throughout the time, when you place the multiple beatings that he's described one on top of the other, the immigration judge and the board looked at the totality of the circumstances and believed that it was implausible that at some point he wouldn't seek medical treatment. He's claiming that these beatings were so severe that he needed, that he wants to base a persecution claim on. In addition, the board did rest its decision on a lack of detail for when he lived in Djibouti for almost a year. The board also went through and identified a lack of details. So you have inconsistencies, implausibilities, a lack of detail, which has been outlined by the board in this instance. A myriad of these things. They looked at the totality of the record, and the government contends that the petitioner has not presented a compelling evidence to overturn the agency's decision. Substantial record evidence supports the board's decision that here you have implausibilities, you have omissions, you have inconsistent statements, and you have a lack of detail. When you take that in totality,
counsel, you've gone over a bit, but I think we understand your argument on that point. So maybe you could sum up very quickly.
I would just sum up by stating that based on the totality of the record and this court's law in Rizik, which states that only one inconsistency, one item is needed to support adverse credibility determination, that this court deferred to the agency's decision and deny the petition for review. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You've got some time left for rebuttal. Have you unmuted yourself?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. To get back to counsel's answer your question, the petitioner stayed in Ethiopia about 4 days after he escaped from prison. This is on AR-132. He only stayed 4 days. And then the second point that I want to make is he did tell the judge that he was told he could apply for asylum in Colombia. That is on AR-165. The only time that he denied saying applying for asylum is when the judge asked him a statement that was read from the CBP notes. Not like the judge, he never said to the judge that I was told I could apply for asylum in Colombia. He did say that to the judge, 165. The challenge that I have with the judge's question is like the way the judge framed the question. It is, pointing out the two discrepancies, simply asking him whether he applied for asylum in Colombia, whether he made that statement to the CBP officer, and clearly he said he did not. But in his mind, he's thinking like he never applied for asylum. He was told he could apply, was finding people to help him to apply, but going through the asylum process in the United States, I'm sure he had some sense of what an asylum application process. But he did not go through that process. It is clear in his mind that what happened in Colombia is not that he applied for asylum in Colombia. And as far as the implausibility in Djibouti is concerned, Your Honor, we don't even know how much money he had from the record. We don't know. He had steady employment for 10 years in Ethiopia. He was traveling back and forth to Djibouti for like 6 years. And then there's nothing on the record, whether he paid rent, whether he stayed with family members, whether he stayed with friends. There's nothing. And then again, the IJ never asked him more about his living conditions in Djibouti. All he was asked was, well, how did you support yourself in Djibouti and whether he applied for asylum? These are two questions that he would ask. And from these two questions, it would be very difficult to make implausibility findings without giving him an opportunity to speak more about it. It's just like saying someone from Seattle not live in Canada for 1 year with the saving that he has working in the United States for 10 years without having more testimony about his life in Djibouti and about the savings. And then in addition, he testified that his mom was sending money to Djibouti.
There is some testimony that his mother facilitated getting savings to him, but there's no testimony about the size of his savings. Is that fair?
Nothing.
Was he required to provide that?
He is not, but that doesn't allow the judge to speculate to fill the gaps as well.
You're at the end of your time. I want to ask my colleagues whether they have any more questions of either side.
I do not.
Then I thank both counsel for their arguments in this case, which will be submitted.